It is the morning show. I'm Kate Archer Kent. We discuss how to protect young athletes when they play contact sports like football, like hockey, and the latest research on head injuries. Call in with your questions about safety in sports, prevention, and response at the youth level, 800-642-1234. Email ideas at WPR.org. Kristen Kuchera is director of the National Center for Catastrophic Sports Injury Research and an associate professor in the Department of Exercise and Sports Science at University of North Carolina at Chapel Hill. Kristen, welcome to the Ideas Network.
Thank you, Kate, for having me. I'm happy to be here.
Good morning. And Tracy Sneddon with us, a clinical associate professor at UW-Madison School of Nursing with research in the area of child and adolescent concussions. Tracy, welcome.
Thank you. Good morning. I am excited to be here.
Good morning. So let's start with doctors releasing Buffalo Bills safety Damar Hamlin from a hospital to continue recovering at home. You know, after we witnessed what happened on the field last week and Hamlin suffering cardiac arrest, I want to ask both of you, what is on your mind about Hamlin's case and recovery, what it tells us? Tracy, you first.
Sure. I think we would all agree that Hamlin's case has been extremely high profile in the media and in the public and has gained attention from everyone, sport and non-sport. And I think the greatest gain, if I could say, from this terrible incident that has come out with a very positive outcome thus far is the attention on what emergency procedures look like and the need to have those individuals on field immediately. So as we saw in that game, high profile NFL, in general, those games have 29 medical personnel on the field, at the field at any time, so able to respond. Sadly, not every sport, every level, most especially youth, has that response. And so I think bringing the attention to the need to understand CPR and emergency protocols is really, really great. And I can't emphasize enough how wonderful the positive outcome for Damar has been for everybody.
Kristen, what comes up for you?
Witnessing and watching that event, first of all, thinking about, the athlete and the players and the other coaches and other providers that are there, as well as family members. But one thing I thought of is that our center tracks catastrophic sport injuries, and which would include deaths and events that lead to disability. And, one thing we know from our research is that these types of events are rare, which is good. We want them to be rare, but when they do occur, Tracy said, a prompt response is critical. And so this was, as said before, a great example of a situation where there were a lot of emergency medical personnel and just medical personnel there to respond. CPR, AEDs, automatic external defibrillators were there. This was just a great example of how this prompt response can provide a positive outcome. And we really want to see these kinds of responses in the lower levels of play.
I would imagine, too, it was a wake-up call for teams at all levels of sport, as they say, whoa, we have to review our practices and policies. What should youth coaching staff be doing in the aftermath of this? Tracy, go ahead.
Sure. I think we saw even from media reports that was almost instantaneous, that field level teams, coaches, athletic trainers were again reviewing their emergency procedures. And I think that was our first response to what occurred there, that although this is something that is part of the training, part of the renewal process for emergencies, but I think it really put it front and center to what do we do? What do we have access to? Again, some schools at the youth level and club level don't even have an athletic trainer available to them on the field. They don't have an AED, as we just heard, mentioned from Kristen. So I think it's about also bringing light to the gaps in recognition of emergencies like this and how important they are to good outcomes.
Kristen, where are the gaps that you see in your research? How adequately prepared are staff at the high school level, at the college level, to respond to injuries?
Yeah, I mean, I think what we do know from research is about, and I'll speak to the high school level, about 70% of high schools have access to a certified athletic trainer. This research comes from the National Athletic Trainers Association and the Corey Stringer Institute. It's called the ATLAS program. And you can go online and you can see which high schools have a certified athletic trainer on staff or have an athletic trainer contracted. So we do know that not all schools have access to an athletic trainer. We would like to see all schools having, you know, the access to AEDs. And we know that having an AED within 3 minutes of an event is very critical for a positive outcome, survival. So that's another really important piece for us to think about. And then, you know, Tracy's emphasis on reviewing our emergency action plans, you know, that review should be taking place annually and, you know, should be a pretty thorough review. So everyone knows their role and what they need to do in the event of emergency so that everything happens really promptly. Because, you know, as we saw, these events are very, very stressful and scary.
But in the absence of an athletic trainer or a robust staff, if you will, you know, for a particular team, and especially at the youth level, who should be responsible for the sideline, you know, recognition and response to injuries in practices and games? Who should it be assigned to, Kristen?
Yeah, that is a great question, because, again, we know not all schools have access to an athletic trainer. You know, coaches receive CPR as well as a training in AED use. I can say that from the high school level. I'm not exactly certain in terms of the competitive youth leagues exactly what those rules are in terms of trainings, but I do know that coaches do get that type of training. And then just, again, ensuring that we're reviewing emergency protocols and assigning roles to the individuals who are there so that things can happen. I do know it's really it's a great thing to say, right? Have an AED within 3 minutes. And I know it's much more difficult to make that happen, you know, than I make it sound. So I do think that is a challenge for a lot of us to be working together on.
Tracy, in the area of head injuries, which you really know, how critical is it for coaches to be required to take concussion education and training or like a course on concussions?
Yeah, important transition. So thanks for bringing this topic to mind. In all states, I believe it was about the year 2015, there is now, you know, concussion law. And concussion law has a variety of components within it, some of which in some states include certain levels of training to certain coach and field level members. So the importance of recognizing a concussion is of greatest priority. And I think we've come a long way with teaching coaches, families, even athletes themselves about recognizing the signs and symptoms of a concussion and even those mechanisms that might produce that injury. So, you know, through legislation and through overall public education and awareness, we've really gained some ground on concussion in general. And it all starts, like I said, with awareness and recognition. Now, we still have a lot of work to do in access for care for these individuals who do appear to have a concussion. And some of my work has found that there are disparities in access to care. Those who are student athletes who have private insurance, who identify as Caucasian, have much higher access to care post-injury. So I think it's a very complicated question that starts at recognition, but then goes through care. And what does that care look like based on evidence? And how does it affect outcomes of these different groups that might have those disparities?
That's so important to point out. And also to hear you say that diagnosis is only a starting point because there is a trajectory after that.
Yes, indeed. I will expand with, you know, I grew up in northern Wisconsin, where the access isn't as robust as it might be in some of the bigger cities in Wisconsin or across the U.S. And that's where some of those disparities are just glaring.
Talking about sports injuries with Tracy Sneddon, clinical associate professor at the UW-Madison School of Nursing, and Kristen Kuchera, director of the National Center for Catastrophic Sports Injury Research. You can join in along the way, 800-642-1234. Kristen, your research center's preliminary data for 2022 says at least 9 student athletes died last year playing football or in football-related activities. How typical are these numbers compared to previous years?
Thank you for asking that. We're currently working on finalizing our annual report. We put out an annual report, among others, every year looking at catastrophic football injuries as well as to other sports, but this is our report on football fatalities. And what I would say is that normally what we would see in terms of football on average is that we see about 10 to 11 deaths per year. And that is an average from the last 5 years. And when we think about these events, we think about the ones that are due to traumatic injuries, so such as a catastrophic traumatic brain injury, or in a case of something like commotio cordis, where someone is hit in the chest. We see 2 to 3 on average deaths, and this is the high school and the college level combined. When we think of events like sudden cardiac arrest, not due to a traumatic event, or exertional heat stroke, there are about 8 to 9 events on average per year. So, excuse me, we have, you know, these numbers are a little lower than what we have seen on average over the past 5 years, is what I would say. We do see more of these events at the high school level, but there are a lot more athletes playing football. Almost 1 million athletes play football in the United States. And we have about, 75 to 80,000 collegiate level football players.
How likely is your data accurately capturing the actual number, you know, considering all the sports facilities and all the teams out there? How are you able to really capture this?
Yes, that's an excellent question. Our center in the past, and I would even say now, has relied heavily on searching the online available media sources. So certain search engines online. And so we are reliant on these events being reported online for us to capture them. We do have a website called sportinjuryreport.org, and it's a place where anyone can go and report just the basic details of a catastrophic sport injury. It is really challenging to ensure that we're capturing all of them. I would say that we don't at this point, and we're really working hard to try to partner with sport organizations and get the word out about this work so that we can get better capture of these events.
That is UNC Chapel Hill Department of Exercise and Sports Science Associate Professor Kristen Kuchera, and we have UW-Madison Clinical Associate Professor in Nursing Tracy Sneddon. Call in with your questions about youth sport injuries, where they go from here, 800-642-1234. I'm Kate Archer-Kent. You're listening to The Morning Show on the Ideas Network. It is The Morning Show. I'm Kate Archer-Kent. Should you keep your child away from contact sports or let them play on? What risks is your family willing to take for the love of the game? Still time to talk about sports injuries, 800-642-1234. We have UW-Madison Clinical Associate Professor Tracy Sneddon and Kristen Kuchera, who leads the National Center for Catastrophic Sport Injury Research at UNC Chapel Hill. They stay with us. Let's bring on a call, Katie in Duluth, Minnesota. Katie, hi, go ahead.
Yeah, I'm a cardiologist in Duluth, Minnesota, and I see, people of all ages, but I just wanted to emphasize with this conversation about how important it is for everybody, not just the coaches, to learn hands-only CPR in a case of an emergency. It's something that is easy for anybody to do, and anybody could save a life, not just those who are trained in, you know, basic life support or who go through more of the extensive training like a lot of medical personnel do.
Katie, thank you so much for elevating that. Tracy, hands-only CPR and the importance of knowing it. Go ahead.
Sure, Katie, such a great point. Thanks for calling in. And I think we're hearing and seeing much more of interested individuals who are now wanting to learn hands-only CPR and have seen the value of it and what your average person at any event, sport or non-sport, can do to save someone's life. So again, like we just heard, thank you for elevating the importance of what might appear to be something that is a really easy contribution to a terrible event we all experienced.
I want to turn back, Tracy, to concussions and how do medical staff at sports games diagnose concussions? What is that process like?
I think it depends on the level of the staff that's field level. So when an individual appears to have some signs and symptoms that we have seen from the literature and study after study that makes us think someone may have a concussion, that begins the process of evaluation. We generally say that not necessarily is a concussion diagnosed at the time of injury, at the time on the field, the court, the pitch, whatever the sport is. So I think more so it's recognizing those potential signs and symptoms that signal a concussion may have occurred, and then going on for continued medical evaluation away from the game, away from the chaos, and away from the eyes that are all watching. So I think that's what starts the process, and hoping that answers your question. Kate.
Are youth at high risk for concussions?
I think we have to look broadly at that big question you just asked. And I think we have to look by sport. We spent a lot of time today talking about football as a major contact sport at the youth, high school, college, pro level. But there are also other sports that can, you know, have that higher potential for concussion, and that would be women's soccer, which has a very high concussion rate when we compare it to other sports. And we can't forget about sports that some might not come to mind, which is things like cheer. But also lacrosse, wrestling, basketball, ice hockey are all part of this collection. And when you say, are youth at higher risk? I wouldn't say, and the literature doesn't say they're at higher risk for concussion. I think it's all about the mechanism of injury, their growing brain, and what is occurring at the practice site that is maybe, you know, contributing to those hits.
Kristen, your data says there were 3 direct fatalities in high school football last year. All 3 happened due to catastrophic injuries to the brain. What do you see in the data, and how can schools better prevent these severe head injuries?
Thank you for asking that question. I think one of the things that's most important that Tracy mentioned was that every state has a what we call a concussion law, a law that's been enacted to help manage concussion. And there are various pieces of these laws, things like no same return to play once you have been diagnosed with a concussion, and you only return after you've been cleared by an appropriate medical professional. There's also concussion education as part of these laws, so that families and athletes know about concussion, how to recognize if they have one. And then thinking about the other types of things, which is, you know, return to learn. I think some states have had some pieces put into that, but from our center standpoint, knowing the state law and ensuring that we follow that state law, once an athlete has a concussion, if they do go back to play prior to healing, they could be at risk for an event called second impact syndrome. And this is a catastrophic event that could occur if someone returns to play too soon and then suffers a hit. So those, I think, are some of the really important pieces. And then, of course, having access to certified athletic trainers who are trained to recognize symptoms and evaluate concussions. among all athletes and active individuals.
Kristen Kuchera, Director of the National Center for Catastrophic Sports Injury Research there. Tracy Sneddon with us, Clinical Associate Professor at the UW-Madison School of Nursing. This is really difficult. Lucille from Wetoma called in. Great-grandson had five concussions, Lucille says here, and some with sports injuries, others at gym classes or outside activities like skiing. Two had knocked the great-grandson unconscious, and they died by suicide before they turned 16. And Lucille has a very hard time talking about it, but said that the family thinks the only explanation is the concussions. Tracy, what are your thoughts?
What a hot and very important question. And I think we're seeing more and more, thankfully, research that's being done on, first of all, the psychological effects of concussion itself. And then you mentioned in this case, the effects of repetitive concussion on youth and all age groups. I think when we think about this terrible situation for Lucille and the family, I want to acknowledge that it must be unbearable, you know, to have experienced that and then the loss. So sending, of course, sympathies and condolences for that terrible outcome. When we look at the research and how it might relate to those who have mental health, psychiatric concerns, post-injury, it's really difficult to determine what's the contribution of those head injuries. And it's not my area of expertise,
sure,
to be
sure.
completely honest with you. There's much in the media and the literature about CTE.
And much more.
Encephalopathy, yes.
Much more to learn. And we're out of time. Thank you both for joining us.
Yes, sorry. Thank you.
Thank you for having us.
Tracy Sneddon, Clinical Associate Professor at the UW-Madison School of Nursing, Kristen Kuchera at the National Center for Catastrophic Sports Injury Research. You're listening to The Morning Show on the Ideas Network.